Hey, Justin.
Hey, Andros. What's up, man?
Or is it really Justin? Is it really Justin, or am I talking to just an AI facsimile of Justin Womack from the Marketing Geeks?
You never could be too sure these days. I don't know how to prove it one way or the other, but you just got to take my word for it, buddy. This is me.
Oh, yeah. But who knows anymore? I mean, it is another week and there is more AI news than I can shake a stick at. And believe me, you've never seen me shake a stick, but when I shake that stick, I can shake a lot of things.
Oh man.
With that, that stick can shake all over the place, man. When I shake my stick. So
you paint quite a picture. Wow. Wow. Yeah. Thank you for that. For our listeners, they're loving every minute of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But the real question is, am I really shaking a stick, or is it just a video of me shaking a stick that was generated by AI?
Exactly.
I guess we'll never know.
How can you ever know what's real and what's not real these days? You just can't.
Well, I guess you'll have to take my word for it that I am real. So ladies and gentlemen, I am the real Andros Sturgeon.
And I am the real Justin Womack.
And we are the real Marketing Geeks.
Marketing Geeks.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, welcome to our show. Here we are. How's Oregon, man? You're up there in the.
Yeah. Living it up. I've now been through an ice storm, went without power for over a week, and am just adapting to the new reality of rain. It's like the reverse of California, where it rains like three times a year in California. Well, in Oregon, it rains every day except for about three times a year. So I'm having to adapt to that kind of new reality. But, you know, I'm making it slowly but surely.
It's a tough one. You know, I spent a decade there. And then when I came here to the Netherlands, first of all, when I left Oregon, I was like, if I spend one more winter there, I'm going to kill somebody. And and so I left for sunnier pastures, and I was down back in California for a little bit. That's when you and I met and did a bunch of work together. But then here I am back in the Netherlands, where it is almost the exact same climate. So, in fact, there's a huge windstorm right now, code orange, as they say, or code oranja, as the Dutch like to call it. But let's enjoy these winters while we can, because soon it's just going to – I mean, this is a pre – it's already spring here, man. It's like the middle of February. We should be like actually sledding and – we have this warm windstorm, and the spring flowers are already coming up like 6 weeks early. It's a little bizarro and kind of frightening.
But it's also a little crazy how quickly the years go as you get older. I mean, we're already, a sixth of the way through 2024. I mean, we're almost 2 months through it, and I feel like we're just getting started. But, you know, that's what happens as you get older. Time flies, time moves faster, and we got to keep up with it, because things and the pace of technology changing is not slowing down, even though time feels like it's speeding up.
No, in fact, literally since the last time we did our show, which was just a few weeks ago, there's been another breakthrough with AI. And this time it is OpenAI's video platform called Sora. Now, I'm sure our seven listeners have probably seen some of these videos. If not, you can just head over to the OpenAI YouTube channel. They're posting videos on a regular basis. And it is uncanny. I mean, do you remember when the first images, like the AI images, were coming out and they looked a little wonky and you could kind of tell the fingers were all strange? And now, just 1 year later, they are frighteningly good. They are absolutely frighteningly good. They're super hyper realistic. And now
even the hands are starting to look like hands now. They're getting the right number of fingers on hands. I mean, that's incredible.
That's right. And now Sora has upped the game. And it's kind of interesting because now there's this pissing contest between Google and OpenAI. So Google initially were not going to release their AI. And then OpenAI, which is backed in part by Microsoft, they released their public version for free. So Google, originally their AI was called Bard. And now they have changed the branding to Gemini. And I've used both of them. I'm still partial to OpenAI, but what was interesting was that they Google made this big announcement and they said, okay, here's Gemini. It's going to be, you know, the next thing. And now we're going to start doing images. They're going to be integrating it into your Google Suite pretty soon. You can pay €20 or $20, which is the same cost as OpenAI. And it'll do things like it'll help you, you know, purge your emails and help you with docs, documents, and it's integrated into the Google Suite. So that's helps with with being productive. But and then they said, well, now we got images. And then like the very next day, OpenAI was like, yes, but now we got video. And the videos they produced are uncanny. Now, there's a caveat to all of this, which is the platform, the Sora platform, is not available to anybody. So of course the images that we're seeing are like super dope, right? But you know, is that because how much training did that take? How much, you know, regeneration? We don't know things like what's going to be the quality of the videos. How long are the videos going to be that we can generate? Is that going to be a premium cost? You know, it's got to take a lot of processing power to do that.
Well, let me say that it looks like from the samples that we've seen, the demos, that they're going to be short. You're going to get like 5 to 10 second videos from your text prompt, which is really quite amazing. And the demos that they put out are incredibly accurate to what's being asked of them. But we're not to the point where they're going to have audio, or at least not like speaking audio. They might have music you could put on the back of it, but they won't have like words being spoken, things like that, as far as I know.
Yeah.
And they won't. And they have limitations. But I mean, if you look at, again, the trajectory, if you look at where the digital image creation was a year ago versus where it is now, and it's night and day, you can figure the same thing is going to happen with video. And a year from now, in February 2025, we're going to be looking at videos that are probably, you know, 1 to 5 minutes in length, and it'll continue to grow from there, that are quite accurate, quite impressive. And soon, this is going to threaten a lot of animation jobs, I think, first and foremost. It's going to change the way YouTubers are looking at creating YouTube content. It's going to change a lot. So this is going to be disruptive, big time.
In fact, the CEO of DreamWorks Animation just recently stated that within 2 or 3 years, they will, most of the animation will be done by AI. But the question is what does this mean for, you know, the average person? And I was thinking about this because it has dominated our lives. It is exactly 1 year ago, exactly, that I first heard about ChatGPT, and it was like, oh, what's this thing? And tried it out, and it was still hallucinating quite a bit. And here we are 1 year later, and it is now such an integral part of my workflow that if it disappeared tomorrow, I would have to tell all my clients, I'm sorry, it's going to take me 5 times longer to do everything. Because, and some things I wouldn't be able to do anymore. It's, and I, you know, I don't look at it as a way to do the work for me. I look at it as a way to, do the heavy lifting for a lot of the things that I was doing. So for instance, and I've talked about this, if I am to create an SEO driven article, I still have to manually find the keywords. It won't do that for me. And I have, some platforms. I use a platform called Neuron Writer, which I bought from AppSumo a while ago. It's one of the best purchases I've ever made. And it will look for the top keywords in, if you have a key phrase or a keyword that you want to dominate for, then you put it in there. It'll find the top pages with those keywords, and then it will extract the keywords out. And then you can use AI to write a first draft of an article. And most of the time, they're crap. The art, like anybody who like writes the article and then doesn't edit it, It's like so awful. So I have to go in and I have to edit it. But at the end of the day, the first draft is always the hardest thing to write. You're looking at a blank page with a cursor, and that's like the most terrifying thing ever. So at least as you famously said, version one is better than version none. And then I can work on version two directly instead of having to slog through version one.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you're getting your own virtual assistant is what you're getting out of AI right now. Instead of having to pay somebody to do those menial tasks for you, you're getting somebody to do some of the initial heavy creative work, like you said, like the first draft. That's a huge creative burden. But getting that out, you could then, you know, exercise your creativity to branch off from what the ideas that helps to like start. And it makes things a lot easier. The other thing I want to get into at some point here is because there's a lot of disruption. There's a lot of jobs at risk. However, there's still a lot of lawsuits that will be coming because the way that AI works right now is it's borrowing from the styles, the works of millions and or billions of creators over the history of time, including authors, including artists, including, you know, a lot of copyrighted material. Right. And so I don't know how that's going to unfold because that could slow down the speed of how fast we get access to these video generating softwares because of the coming lawsuits. And you know that they're coming and they're already in action. But you know that the consequences of those are coming very soon.
Well, one of them just got thrown out. So Sarah Silverman was one of the chief people suing OpenAI for plagiarism. The case was just thrown out. And, you know, there's been other cases where they basically said anything that's AI generated cannot be copywritten. So I think that's one form of protection. But what's interesting is like all these companies, like I think it was the New York Times and some other companies are suing OpenAI, except for Wikipedia. Wikipedia is like, go ahead, take all of it. And that's actually, at the end of the day, it is probably the one that you want it to steal.
Yeah, because, yeah.
it has mostly the most accurate information. But that said, no matter what, you still have to verify every piece of information. I just had this happen, actually, where I wrote an article, an SEO article for Black History Month about George Washington Carver. And one of the things that it mentioned, because I was like, give me some...
Wait, was this for you or for your son's homework?
No, this is actually for a client.
All right. Just checking.
And I'm using AI to write my son's homework. One of the things I asked about was like, what were some of the accomplishments? And it mentioned peanut butter as one of them. And it turned out that he did not have anything to do with peanut butter. So, you just got to catch those little tiny things. Otherwise, it will give it away. But that said, it is also very handy. So here's an interesting – I have two interesting use cases for AI. One of them is recently the company I'm doing a majority of my work with here in Europe, they have cut the budget a little bit. And one of the budgets that they cut was live trade shows, which are super duper expensive. And I'm actually very happy about that. The sales team, not so much because they like the face-to-face meetings. But these trade shows are like $50,000, right? And give me a $50,000 budget for a campaign, and I will rock that shit. I will get way more leads. But you know, salespeople, they like the face to face interaction.
They like to travel too. Come on.
Of course, in the hotel. Yeah, you know, who doesn't like that? But so they were a little depressed. So what I did was I kind of put together a strategy. And so it turns out that Salesforce, which is what they use for their CRM, is now able to connect directly to Sales Navigator and LinkedIn. So Sales Navigator is a bit expensive, but it's not that much as far as lead generation goes. And so what you can do now is you can search for your prospects by industry, and you can then narrow it down into different different titles of who the decision makers are. And then they in Sales Navigator, they have this thing where you can look at each of the people that you're focusing on and you can see the stuff that they've posted. So then you can start commenting on their stuff and before you even connect to them. But the magic comes in where what I explain to them is that once they find a prospect that looks pretty good, they can use ChatGPT-4 to research who that person is, because a lot of public facing people, especially C-level, they have a lot of public information. So what I did was I had them, I had ChatGPT write a introductory email using some of the information that they found. So it's like, as someone who's interested in these types of topics, I think that you would find this very interesting, you know, so you can personalize it. And then translate it to German. So then you take that, copy, paste it, and you know, personalize it a little more. But then in that way, what you're doing is you're where some of these emails to, like, before you had to like search for the person, look online, you know, find out where they were. Is that the person? No. Is this the person? No. ChatGPT-4 will actually find who that person is, give you a little bio, and then you can use that bio to write an introductory letter. And then, and what's even funny is one last thing. It wrote the introductory letter, and it was way over the top, you know? And I said, well, this is kind of for an American audience, but what I need you to do is I need you to rewrite this for a German audience and then translate it to German. And then instead of all this thing like amazing and fantastic and wonderful, it was just like, hello, sir, good day. You know, it was like so formal, but so it knows.
Totally matter of fact.
Yeah, but it knows the tone of the culture that your audience is in. So, you know, those are the types of things that you can really do to leverage the technology.
Well, I mean, it's crazy because if it can locate the posts of each of the people, it can pretty much build like a psychological profile on your targets, or at least soon it will be able to, and you'll be able to like customize your messaging directly to that person's like interests, directly to what moves that person. I mean, we're going to have like Hannibal Lecter technology at the, you know, right there.
We already have it. It's called Facebook.
Oh, yes. Hannibal Lecter technology, Facebook. That's right.
So, but anyway, and then on top of that, there's another layer to this. So there's a platform that we purchased called Lead Forensics, which is pretty good. And they have the ISPs of all the major companies, right? Like almost every company that you can think of. So if somebody visits the website, they can't tell you who visited the website, but they can say, well, someone from this company visited the website. But if you, and that's also connected to Salesforce. So what we have then is if you use LinkedIn, that Sales Navigator, to focus on your leads, throw those over to Salesforce, and then connect this other platform to Salesforce, you can kind of get an idea then if somebody visits the website, who that person is. Because of GDPR, there's no way to know, but you can kind of narrow it down, and then you can start a conversation directly with those people a lot easier. And this is all thanks to, you know, AI and some of these other tools. So the sales process, if you're not using this technology for your sales process or your lead generation, man, you're going to get behind really quick.
That word forensics is going to become more and more important in marketing because, like, the degradation of cookies or the loss of what we used to have available to us. We used to have more information about the people visiting websites, things like that, that are now becoming more restricted due to increasing privacy laws, more red tape. So the more that comes up, the more that we're going to rely on AI to fill in the gaps. And that's like the whole forensic angle is that AI is the detective to then, all right, now if I'm only getting a very, very limited set of data now because of the new privacy rules, how can you reverse engineer the little bit that I get to tell me what company this person is from or some information about the person visiting the site? And that's what that's doing. It's just crazy that how we're, even though we get one roadblock in front of us, we're figuring out a way around it already.
Yeah. And I'm actually predicting that we are in the final days of SEO in general. I don't think that SEO is going to matter anymore because what I have started to do, and I know I'm not alone in this, is I'm not Google searching stuff anymore. I'm going to ChatGPT-4 because ChatGPT-4 has an update. It's a little more recent, but it also searches the internet real time. So, if my queries are now going directly towards towards ChatGPT-4, especially because let's face it, man, the internet sucks now. You go to any website and it's like there's the cookies, there's the pop-ups, and if you have video, like the, especially ones that have like the ads and the video pop-ups and all that, it's like to hell with that. I don't want to deal with that. So I'm more and more doing my search queries directly from ChatGPT-4. So what does that mean for SEO?
It means that Google eventually is going to plug in their AI tool into the Google search engine. But if for them to do that, though, they have to, it's like spitting in the face of thousands and thousands of marketers that have built up these whole businesses on the backbone of SEO. Now, eventually they're going to have to, they're going to feel the pressure. If the consumers demand that they want a better search experience and they want more accurate results that are not manipulated by tricks of the trade, they're going to rely on AI, and eventually Google's going to have to cave to that. But I have a feeling there's going to be a little bit of resistance there because Google makes a lot of money off these marketers. Google makes a lot of money on the advertisers, and they have to kind of bring them into the fold as that happens. So,
yeah. And so what does that mean for us, like for marketers in general? I've noticed that, somebody has mentioned that Quora, for instance, is going to they're like basically if you want to go to Quora, it was like a good place for information, you know, people asking different questions. But now you can't even go to Quora without logging in. So mm-hmm. they really want your data, and that's because of ad blockers. I mean, I'm sure you have ad blockers for YouTube. I don't see any ads ever. And most of the ads that are on websites tend to not show up. I still get the the cookie agreement, but I even have a plugin for that will automatically decline cookies. So as far as like how does one make money at this point with if you're running ads? And Google, I'm sure, is seeing the pinch, so they're going to have to rethink. You know, the whole internet has to be rethought, especially as we get into an election year with some of these deep fakes and the way that it works. It's going to get crazy, man. I can't even at this point, it's anyone's guess what the future is going to bring.
I'm seeing a lot of like the news sites are now putting up blockers that make you either provide your data or buy a subscription. And they're really, really changing the way that works because they're just not making the same amount of money that they used to make off of organic traffic because, again, they're not able to monetize it in the way that they used to be able to monetize it. So there's consequences for all the privacy laws. Yeah, it's great to have more privacy and everything, but there is a price to be paid. And that's where a lot of these companies feel, like you said, feeling the cash crunch. They're going to be implementing either subscriptions or asking for your data very overtly and asking for more and more from the user. And ultimately, the ones that are going to succeed in Google search in being able to be found over time are going to be the ones that have the best user experience and the best content. Right. And so, it doesn't – if you have the best content and best user experience and you have bad SEO, it won't matter eventually because eventually the algorithm – it won't matter about the algorithms. You won't have to trick anybody. The best sites will come to the top because AI will find them. It will do the work for you.
I hate to break it to you, but it's not going to be the best sites. It's going to be the ones with the most money. So the biggest sites, the ones that, you know, the smaller sites, even if you have the best content on a small site, it is not going to, it's not going to rise to the top. It's going to get more pay to play. And so there's a darker side to AI that, you know, I the other day I was like staring at the ceiling at 3 a.m. and in a cold sweat when I suddenly realized like, who are the people that own all the AI that we're starting to use? It's Meta, it's Microsoft, it's Google, it's Elon Musk,
and very familiar faces, right?
and they're also psychotic, most of these people who run these companies, and so. So, the fact that these algorithms, it's one thing to have an algorithm, but it's a whole other thing to have AI manipulating you. And, I've seen people literally posting things like someone posted a legit picture of Donald Trump saving kittens from a hurricane. And they were just like, you know, you'll never see Obama or Biden doing this. It's like, really? You think that fat fucker like actually rescued? Like, come on. And the fact that people are not able, I mean, it's bad enough that people can't discern fact from bullshit, you know, and it's a whole other thing when you can create really convincing bullshit that people are just buying into, and people are not willing to do the research, and especially with journalism kind of dying, and now you can just make up anything out of full cloth. There's this part of me that's like, oh my God, this is the most exciting, interesting technology that I've ever experienced, hands down. And on the other hand, I'm like, we're just doomed, aren't we? This is like,
yeah,
that's
we're in trouble, man. I mean, like, let's go to some of those deep fakes that we've seen recently. George Carlin, there was a whole comedy set that was released of George Carlin just like a month ago or something that was uncanny. It sounds just like him in his kind of style of humor. Where he's talking about how he's dead now and like making jokes. And now that's also in court, I believe. I don't know if it may, I don't know if it got thrown out.
Well,
or what,
it turns out that still the actual routine was written by a person, and it wasn't bad. I have to admit, it wasn't bad. The voice was AI generated, but, and I actually asked, ChatGPT to write a George Carlin monologue, and it was absolutely atrocious. It was, it was really, really awful. And I do believe, and I sincerely believe this, that there is this component that AI will never be able to capture. And that is the human element. There's even with like when I look at an AI generated image, I kind of know right away it's AI generated. There's something about it that just that uncanny valley. And every time I read something, and this is one of the reasons that I'm able to edit AI written material so well, is because there's certain phrases and certain things that I'm just like, oh, that sounds like AI. So those are the things that I rewrite.
You know, the perfect example of that is, I don't know if you've seen this video that's floating on the internet, but Mark Zuckerberg attended a recent UFC event, and he was, because he's gotten into jiu-jitsu, he was cornering one of the fighters, meaning he was like in the coaching circle of the fighters. Yeah. And so he enters the ring with everybody, and there's a video like filming him, and he's the most awkward looking like person I've ever seen in my life. And so you're talking about how the lack of the human elements. Well, if you want to see the lack of the human element, look at the AI Mark Zuckerberg, which is not even AI, but you know, like I kind of think he is AI, to be honest.
Just look at Mark Zuckerberg.
That's what I'm saying. It's really him. This is actually really him. He just is so awkward. It looks like it's AI, but apparently it's not. It's actually him. But it's like, it's so funny because like, he like, has no idea what to be doing. He's like bobbing to music that's not even playing. It's like just hilarious.
I will go to my grave convinced that Mark Zuckerberg is an android alien, and he has been sent here to destroy the human race with his awful machine. And you can't convince me otherwise. They did.
He's done a really good job, real quick. He's done a really good job of like hiding himself in the background for the last like year or two because Elon Musk kind of took over his spotlight. But I mean, so he's been like, all he's done is stay quiet, and his reputation has improved. But I mean, every now and then he creeps out and you see, and it's like, oh yeah, he's still the same.
I know. Well, I really wanted that cage match to happen between him and Elon Musk because, you know, I mean, what a world when I'm actually rooting for Mark Zuckerberg, you know, to... You know, just because he's going to kick Elon Musk's ass, you know, but I and this is the problem, like, you know, so you have a guy like Musk and we rely on our space advancements with this guy. And he's insane. He's the way he's manipulating even the Ukraine war with providing Starlink to the Russians and shutting it off at certain moments. You know, they even Navalny's widow, you know, Alexander Navalny, the Russian politician who was just murdered by the Kremlin. She had her Twitter profile shut down temporarily.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's like the problem with our world right now is that it's not prepared to deal with people that have that much money and power. We just don't, we can't, I mean, look at what's happening with Donald Trump. And let's make no mistake, I have read the 91 indictments. I have read the court case. I follow that thing, you know, to daily, because I want to see the evidence for myself. That guy's as guilty as sin. And there's no, but the thing is that, you know, one of the guys, his friends from Shark Tank, I forget,
Kevin O'Leary.
Yeah, Kevin O'Leary. You know, he's like, oh, this is terrible. This is just how business is done in New York. It's like, really? That's how business is done in New York? It's just the justice system isn't set up to deal with people who just rob the system blind and have that much power and sway. So and now they have AI algorithms. But on the flip side of that, the good news, I think, is that there's also a way to use this technology to bring people together and develop new ways of going about business that are going to be that can set things right. And I don't know where that all of that's going to fall on, but you know, the next few years are going to be quite interesting.
Well, speaking of Elon Musk, I that's a good segue into the Neuralink story that came out recently, yes. Because we have been talking a little bit about how they were entering human trials for Neuralink, the world's first brain chip to be inserted into somebody's skull and layered on top of the brain. And so that has been done. The first patient has occurred. And so far from the stories we're reading, where Elon Musk's quote about the guy is that he's doing, quote, okay, and that he's able to move a mouse with his brain. And they're working on mouse clicks now that are not very consistent.
Not a real mouse, not a squeak squeak mouse, but a click click mouse.
Oh yes, computer mouse. Good distinction there. But the funny thing is, like, if you were to hook a an electrode to your brain, which is just like you just put a little wire and kind of use electrode paste and attach it to the top of your head, you could probably accomplish the same thing by using your brain waves to move a mouse cursor. And also there's like now eye tracking technology that could accomplish the same goal at a much more efficient manner.
You also know who the source was for moving a mouse cursor with your brain story. You know who the source was?
Was Elon. It Elon himself?
Yeah. So, you know, it may be true. It may be he was just on a Coke binge and, you know, he thought, he moved
the in. Guy is dead, the first transplant guy.
Sorry, yeah, I see it, and I've said this before, I will go to my grave. I will never ever ever let Elon Musk mess with my brain. That would be like insanity. But on that same note, you know, the Apple just released their augmented reality goggles.
Yeah, the Vision Pro.
Yeah, they look stupid. Unless I'm skiing, I will never wear those things.
And there's been videos posted online of people wearing them, like crossing the street, people wearing them at the gym. There's one video of a guy driving the Tesla Cybertruck and he's in self-driving mode, but he's in his car, like playing with his Vision Pro headset, which is totally illegal because you're not allowed to not be watching the road and not actually, be holding the wheel while you're, in self-driving mode, but he's doing it. And it's already kind of out of control. I've heard very mixed things about the headset. The weight has been a problem for some people, how heavy they are. And like the best feature I've heard has been like the watching a movie on there. But are you going to pay $3,500 for that experience of watching a movie? Maybe. I mean, people pay for a TV, but I haven't heard like a lot of like really efficient use cases that make it like really worth the money from anyone.
The one thing that could make it money, it turns out, you cannot do, and that is, of course, watch porn.
That's right. It was banned. I forgot.
Yeah. And so, like, what am I going to do with this thing? I mean, you know, the best feature of the entire thing is now taken away from me. I mean, I want, you know, I'm waiting for the day that I can, you know, have sex with a virtual Jennifer Lawrence and.
Now you got to wait longer. You got to wait longer now.
Yeah, forget that, man. I want it now. I want my jetpack. I want to be on a jetpack flying over the city watching virtual porn with Scarlett Johansson, you know.
Well, you got her voice. You got that part. It's just this. The rest of it, they've got all this red tape on it. You just got to get somebody's got to jailbreak the thing. It'll happen eventually. And then you're going to have to go through a whole black market, dark web thing to get access to it. But I'm sure it'll be available at some point.
Well, speaking of virtual sex, this brings us, of course, to the very awesome segment of our show, which is, of course, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Sex Robot Report. Here we go.
Yeah. Boom,
boom. Yeah, play that music. Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Okay, here we go now. All right, this is from The Hill. The story is, sex robots go to court, testing the limits of privacy and sexual freedom. It's not what you think. The sex robots are not going to court to lobby for their freedom. But according to The Hill, the story by Jonathan Turley, consider this. A brothel opens offering, quote, sexual services, including experiences with girls under 15 years old. Typically, the police response to such a brothel would make the Normandy landing look like a small skirmish. But this brothel, Chud AI, is a virtual brothel reportedly staffed by artificial intelligent bots. The controversy is part of a broader debate over sex bots and even sex bot brothels. Not long ago, the first sex robot brothel in Lovedoll, UK was shut down. Oh, shut down. Then we did a story on this. I personally, as a tangent, would not really want to use someone else's sex robot. It's kind of like... there's something kind of weird about that.
You want to make sure that health and safety have come in to inspect it? Is that what you're saying?
You know, it's kind of like the same. I don't want people messing with my algorithm, if you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
You know, it's don't screw with my algorithm. Even individuals such as Stephen Crawford have purchased a doll and then pimped it out to customers. That's a weird fetish. With the rise in such sales, the number of legal and legislative actions has risen as well. Over 50 years ago, what became known as the sexual revolution began in the United States with a debate over the scope of privacy and sexual freedom. We are now facing a second such debate, but the liberal voices that once called for sexual freedom are now advocating for bans and criminal penalties to deny the right to choose a different type of companion, sex dolls and bots. Houston City Council unanimously blocked a proposed sex robot brothel from opening in the city, which would have been the nation's first pay-to-play robot brothel.
So,
pay-to-play. Yeah, pay-to-play. It goes on and on, but you know, it comes down to this question: if I went to a sex robot brothel and I wanted a child size robe. I mean, I wouldn't. By the way, would I do that? That's ridiculous. But there's some lunatic out there that would. You know, I don't know, man. I mean, this stuff is just beyond my pay grade. I can't.
The question is, does that behavior beget more of that behavior in real life, or does it suppress it by letting them exercise their urge in a non-damaging way? So I don't know the answer to that. I mean, potentially it's a better, it's potentially a better solution than the alternative. Yeah. But it might also trigger impulses of more of that in the real world. So I really don't know how that would go. I have no problem with it if it's a legal age doll that looks like it's over 18 years old. But when you get into the other one, I'm not so sure how I feel about it. I'd actually be curious to see if there's any research on that.
What if somebody wanted to get a doll that refused consent, you know? And
somebody wanted to get that doll. So you said somebody wanted
it. Doll, and the whole thing with the doll is that it doesn't consent, and you know.
Oh, but you get to. Oh, I see.
Have your way with the doll. It's like, man, we live in. What happened to like when we were kids and we just fucking played Nintendo? You know, I mean, like none of these questions I had to deal with. Like the worst thing that happened when I was a kid was like, you know, Adam Rich from Eight Is Enough went to my school and he was a pot smoker and it was like a scandal, you know?
I don't even know who that is, but
yeah, there was a show called Eight Is Enough and yeah, whatever. that happened. Anyway, the point is that there are these moral questions that we now have to deal with that are really wild. And I would love to, if one of our seven listeners is like a sex therapist of some sort and deals with these kind of issues, I'd love to get your take on this, because I don't know.
We do a whole episode on the psychology behind this and the moral and ethical implications.
Yeah, exactly. You know, our kids could literally be dating AIs in the next few years. And
There have been articles that have come out just recently about how more and more people who are using just the ChatGPT app that we demonstrated on this show in our last episode, who are becoming attached. So they are becoming a bit of emotionally attached. And this is like pretty first generation, or, you know, not first, but second generation stuff going on right now. We're just scratching the surface of how intimately engrossing one of these AI bots can be. So if people are getting attached now, then absolutely what happened in the movie Her is going to become a reality. It's just to what extent will that reality be? Will that affect everybody, or will that affect only a certain section of people? I don't know.
I don't know. Nikola Tesla fell in love with a pigeon. So what do you want?
He's a bit of an eccentric, though. I mean, come on. That dude invented like everything. Of course he's going to be a weird dude.
Yeah. And if you guys – I don't know if you've seen The Prestige, which is Hugh Jackman.
Great movie.
Of course you have David Bowie playing Nikola Tesla. It's like, you can't get better than that.
It's a bit of fantasy in there. It's not exactly a documentary, but great movie.
So speaking of movies, on to our final segment. Marvel has come out and they said that they are retooling the whole MCU, which they have to now that the Kang dynasty is now imploded. Jonathan Majors, of course, he has been relegated to do, no budget films along with other fine luminaries such as, people that have been completely canceled. So, and plus these new Marvel movies, they absolutely suck. They just suck. They're
bad.
They're really terrible. And at the same time, Madam Web came out, and Madam Web is it's Sony's attempt to do a non-Spider-Man Spider-Man movie. And they already have Craig and the Hunter in the can, and that looks absolutely atrocious. So, you know, these movies are not cheap. They're like $100 million, and so $150 million. These things are absolutely not making money anymore. The stories are terrible, and they don't know what to do with them. It's going to be interesting to see what happens, especially as more AI-generated imagery becomes part of the mainstay of some of these films. I think my prediction is that Deadpool 3 will do very, very well.
Yeah.
But is the new DC universe going to do
next year?
Well?
Oh, yeah. I don't know yet. I'm leaning towards no. I don't think it will do well, but I'm not. I mean, we'll have to wait till we get at least like a preview of the new Superman movie that comes out next year, this year. And it's James Gunn. People like James Gunn. It's got a chance, but I'm leaning towards it's not going to do well. I think it's going to implode quickly.
Of course.
But the new Madam Web, though, is quite an interesting story, because it made like 20 or 30 million worldwide in its opening weekend, which is just awful. I mean, just terrible. And it cost over $100 million to make. I don't remember the exact number, but it's going to lose.
You would need at least 300, 400 to make a little bit of money. It's not going to make that. And from what everyone has said, I won't even waste my time with it, but apparently like the script is awful and there's nothing to it.
The movie, I mean, it's just like, and I don't know if you saw the Dakota Johnson interviews that she did for the show, for the movie, but she looks so disinterested and like almost embarrassed by the movie. It's just funny. It's funny to watch, because you could just tell somebody asked her to name like the Tom Holland Spider-Man movie titles, and she couldn't name any of them. I mean, she just has no interest in superheroes, and it kind of, I think, reflects on the general how that movie is coming across, put it that way.
Yeah, but I think it's not just Madam Web. I think that there's a, talking 20 years that we've been in superhero movies. And every, you know, every there's genres that rise and fall. There was the Westerns. There was, you know, the gritty cop dramas in the 70s. There was, you know, the Italian mafia movies. There, you know, there's these swings that go back and forth. And then, of course, we had all the Harry Potters and magic and fantasy and Lord of the Rings and that whole era. And then there was the superhero era. And now people are, you know, it's also going to the movies is fucking expensive. It's like, once I take, you know, my family to the movies, buy popcorn, that's a year of streaming, right? Yeah. So I actually just recently bought a triple laser projector that I'm getting a wall that I'm converting my part of my house into a home theater because I love the movie going experience. There's a lot of movies I want to show my son, but I don't want to go to the movies anymore. People know how to behave here in the Netherlands more than other places. But
well, it's not so bad anymore because not that many people go to the theaters anymore. Right. So you don't have to deal with that as much when you're there. Now, let me say about superhero genre real quick, is that the genre died about 2 years ago. We saw the first failed year last year was the first like kind of loss of money year for the studios. And then this year is the residual damage of the genre having been dead for 2 years now, where it's just like in pieces right now. Maybe Deadpool revives that a little bit because it's unique from the other titles. Yeah. But I mean, but their superhero fatigue is absolutely real, but they're also dropping like the worst of the worst on us right now too. Out of that whole 20-year run, these are some of the worst movies to come out of that too. So
it's low effort, and we've seen everything. We've seen every story. There, I mean, how many more variants of these stories can you actually?
Yeah, I never thought that we'd get an Ant-Man movie. Like, I thought Ant-Man was a character. I'd never heard of him really. I never thought it would actually turn into a movie. We got three of them, and they were pretty good.
Yeah. So. Okay. Well, I didn't see the last one, but I was a huge Marvel fan for most of their run, but you know, I think a lot of goodwill has gone, especially with these shows on Disney, and you have to watch the shows to know what's happening in some of these movies. And you know, who's got time for that? You know, it was fine during COVID. You know, we had nothing else to do. You know, you bake bread, you like try and write your novel, and you watch a bunch of movies. And now, you know, we all have to go back to work, and that's.
I made it through up to like Loki season one. I think I'd consumed all the content to that point, and then I just fell off. So there's like three or four shows I haven't watched at all, and so I can no longer, and I no longer have the will to try to catch back up. Exactly. So they've done a lot of damage because I was like, we are like super fans practically, and if they lost us, that's a big problem.
Exactly. Same with Star Wars, man. I had a picture of Luke Skywalker in my wallet growing up. I was like Mr. like Star Wars. I had the Star Wars sheets and the Star Wars curtains and the Star Wars action figures, the whole bit. And man, they certainly lost me on that stuff, especially with the last three movies. I've stepped in things more fragrant than those those films. Now they're bringing Rey back. I'm out, yep. Man. I recommend highly Andor still. Like, you got to see Andor.
I still haven't seen it. I do want to see that one. That one I want to watch. I still haven't seen The Mandalorian. I might watch that eventually. Who knows?
It's all right. It's, you know, it's like one of those things. Like, it's kind of like Coldplay. If there's like Coldplay is like what you listen to when there's nothing else on the radio at that moment.
Yeah.
You know, kind of the same thing.
Get the stars. Yeah.
Anyway, next week, I'm sure there'll be another breakthrough with AI, and we will tell you all about it. Go see Common Ground. I'm working on that film right now for Josh Dekel, who was a guest on our show sometime back. Great movie about regenerative agriculture. I am producing a podcast, the Common Ground podcast, and that should be coming out in the next few weeks. So,
Are you going to be like on that show? You get to interview any like super celebs on there?
No, what I've done is they did a whole bunch of interviews for that movie, but like each interview, you know, they only have like the person in for 3 or 4 minutes or 5 minutes. Yep. But some of these interviews are great, and they're like 2 hours long. So I'm cutting those interviews down to like 40 minutes.
That's really smart. Really smart. I love that.
Yeah. Well,
the movie you're talking about in the movie, they cut it down to like 3 or 4 minute clips to put in the movie that you're saying. Exactly. But you have like 2 hours of material. Yeah.
Right. So the extended interviews. And then I'm also building a some other stuff for them that can kind of plug into that. So, you know, it's that, that's the thing with marketing nowadays, man. You gotta be smart. These old, if you're relying on the same old, stuff, I, before we go, this is a really funny story. So at the company iRise that I, do a lot of work for here in Europe, I got one of those calls, like they set up an appointment through the automated system and I could tell right away, like, oh, these guys want to sell me something. So I took the meeting anyway, and it was these two guys from Hungary, and they were selling lead generation. And I was like, all right, guys, how are you doing your lead generation? And they said, well, what we do is, you know, we identify people. And I'm like, and how are you doing this exactly? Well, you know, we do some research. I'm like, okay, so are you using LinkedIn at all? Well, we use a little LinkedIn. Are you using Sales Navigator? Well, not really. I'm like, okay, guys, let me tell you something. First of all, you got to set up an automator. So I gave them this whole like rundown on like setting up an automator through Walaxy, which is a great app, using that for lead generation and some of the stuff that I already explained here. And at the end of it, there was just like this silence. They're like, oh my God, we had no idea that you could do all this stuff. I'm like, yeah, that's what you should be doing. You should be like using this technology and you can sell this, this, and this as an extra service. And, you know, I wish them luck and sent them on their way. So I basically gave them like a training exercise.
Interesting.
Yeah. And this is the thing that as marketers, you've got to, if you're a solopreneur, if you're doing all of this stuff, the current way that most people are doing things is not working. It's not working. So what you got to really think outside the box, and you got to think about value. And it really comes down to one thing. What are the things that you are interested in the same way that you and I lost interest in Star Wars and superhero movies about the same time for the exact same reason is pretty much why everyone did. So you have to think about, like, why are you not reading that email, you know, in the email marketing campaign? What are the ones that you look forward to? What are the pieces of content that you stop for? How are you searching for things nowadays? And if you notice your patterns changing, guaranteed your clients are also changing their patterns too. So you got to rise above that. And the sooner that you do that, because most people are not changing their tactics and they're floundering. But, you know, think about how you can change your tactics and you'll be successful. And that's all there is to it.
Wise words, Andres.
Thank you very much. Have my book. Ladies and gentlemen, with that, I'm Andros Sturgeon.
And I'm Justin Womack.
And we are the Marketing Geeks, and we are out.
Stay classy.
Marketing Geeks, come on, bring your friends. We'll learn marketing from distant lands. Andros Sturgeon and Justin Womack, the fun will never end. It's Marketing Geeks.
Marketing Geeks.